Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Gary, thank you very much indeed for that. The Israeli Defence Minister, Yoav Gallant, has indicated that Israel could launch a ground offensive in Lebanon. This is as 150 people have been killed there in the past 24 hours, including 45 people in Ain al-Delb, south of the capital, Beirut. 50,000 people have gone to Syria, and according to Nasser Yassin, Lebanon's head of emergency disaster management, nearing a million have been displaced. David Mentzer is spokesperson at Israel's National Public Diplomacy Directorate, which is part of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's staff. He was speaking at a press conference earlier. Drive Time took part in the conference via Zoom. And I asked David Mentzer about warning civilians, innocent civilians, in advance of attacks. He makes a number of statements and claims here, I can tell you, that we can clarify afterwards.
Question from Cormac from RTE. In Ireland, in your strikes against Hezbollah and Hamas operatives, how, besides text messaging, text and public messaging, does Israel, at the point of attack, ensure that no civilians are killed? Thank you very much for that question, Cormac. You work for RTE, of course, which is a state-owned broadcaster, and none of us here in Israel have forgotten the fact that very soon after the October 7th massacre, the Republic of Ireland took the decision to back the terrorists rather than the peacemakers. They decided to support the actions of the terrorists by announcing their support for a Palestinian state. None of us here in Israel will forget that. None of us here in Israel also remember that it was Ireland that signed the condolence book for Adolf Hitler. None of us here in Israel also can forget that your population is basically can be counted, the Jewish population of Ireland can be counted on one hand or a couple of hands and feet. There's a reason for all these. There's a common denominator here. So we'll take no lessons whatsoever from Ireland in their support for terrorism. It is support for terrorism. If you, after the October 7th massacre, decide to support the terrorists, then you are in support of the terrorists.
And that's David Mentzer from a spokesperson on behalf of Benjamin Netanyahu's government in response to a question about how they warn innocent civilians ahead of attacks. Now, let's address some of David Mentzer's claims. One, that RT is a state-owned broadcaster. The fact is that RT is... Well, calling it a state-owned broadcaster suggests that it's funded, managed and editorially controlled by the government, which it is not. RT is a national broadcaster, it's your broadcaster, whose primary mission is public service and it's independent of political, commercial and other influences. Mr. Mentzer claimed that Ireland recognised the Palestinian state very soon after the October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas. Ireland formally recognised the state of Palestine on the 28th of May this year. That's over 6 months into the current almost year-long conflict, in the belief that a two-state solution is the only way for Israel and Palestine to live side by side in peace and security. The government said at the time, we also reiterate that Ireland unambiguously recognises Israel's right to exist. Mr. Mentzer said that Ireland signed a condolence book for Adolf Hitler. There was no book of condolences for Adolf Hitler. Our colleague David McCullough, an historian, pointed that out previously. He did offer condolences to the German diplomat Eduard Hempel de Valera at the time. But despite the popular legend, says David McCullough, there was no book of condolences to sign. Mr. Mentzer's claim that the Jewish population of Ireland can be counted on, I quote, a couple of hands and feet. The fact is that at the time of the 2022 Irish census, there were 2,193 Jewish people in Ireland. Another claim that Ireland supports terrorism. That's what David Mentzer said. Ireland has repeatedly condemned Hamas and others who've taken and continue to hold hostages for nearly 11 months. A government statement earlier this month said the suffering endured by these innocent captives and their families is difficult to imagine. We have called for the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages. I repeat this call again today, they say. The government here has repeatedly said it recognises the right of Israel to defend itself in line with international law and international humanitarian law, and also, again, repeatedly, strongly condemned the Hamas attacks on October the 7th last. Now let's go back to the actual question I asked David Mensah, and that's how Israel forewarns innocent civilians and ensures that innocent civilians are kept safe at the point of attack. Here's the answer.
Okay, phone calls, millions of them. Okay, no other country has done this. Absolutely, bar none, no other country has done this in order to limit as much as humanly possible the effect on civilians, while, of course, remembering that both Hamas and Hezbollah, they want civilian deaths. That's precisely what they desire. I think that will support them in their public relations efforts. That is precisely what they want. So phone calls, millions of them, text messages, leaflet drops, websites. Websites and radio broadcasts as well. So even, for instance, the strike against Nasrallah, the arch terrorists, where the element of surprise was, of course, absolutely key. When we struck Nasrallah and the senior terrorists who were with him, that too was done in accordance with international law. So we're not at war with the people of Lebanon, and civilians are never the target. And wherever is possible, we can and we do give advance warnings, even when it costs us the element of surprise. Now, the message to our enemies across the region should be extremely clear. We can hit our enemies wherever they hide. The IDF is ready both offensively and defensively for any scenario.
And that's David Mensah, who's spokesperson on behalf of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Millions of communications, he says, but as we know, over 41,000 people have been killed, many of them innocent women, children and men in Gaza. And there's a mounting death toll in Lebanon as well. The World Food Programme says it's launched an emergency operation to provide meals for 1 million Lebanese people. This comes after, as the UN refugee chief Filippo Grandi says, well over 200,000 people are displaced inside of Lebanon and more than 50,000 have fled to neighbouring Syria. Some forecasts estimate 1 million people could be displaced in Lebanon by the end of this week. Just before coming on air, I caught up with the World Food Programme country director in Lebanon, Matthew Hollingsworth, who spoke to us from Beirut.
It's, a good few hours away from the front lines in terms of the border between Israel and Lebanon, but it's being hit daily. The southern suburbs of the city comes under fairly regular missile fire. And unfortunately, that's been the case now for the last week, well, almost week.
We're watching the bombing in the southern suburbs, as you say, of Beirut over the weekend, and the confirmation that Hezbollah's leader, Hassan Nasrallah, has been killed, and a number of senior officials have been killed as well. We're reading today about the shock among Hezbollah supporters. Is there any sense of chaos or fear that you can glean from what you're hearing?
Look, there's almost, disbelief amongst the entire population. I think people are terrified, to be honest. I mean, obviously the war has been going now for, 11 months in the south of the country, but now it's come to Lebanon, it's come to Beirut. Hundreds of thousands of people have been made homeless, have been dispossessed, displaced across the country. They've, left their jobs behind, they left their homes, they left their pets, they left their friends, they've left their, their farms. And they're all trying desperately hard to get north and primarily to come to Beirut from the south of the country. Now Beirut's under fire as well. And obviously people have watched the war in Gaza over the past year unfold. They really are traumatized at this, at what could be coming next. And obviously there's a great fear that after the missiles stop firing and the bombs stop dropping, there will be a land invasion. So, I mean, that just adds to people's fear.
Mm-hmm. You're right about the extent of the exodus as well, because the UN refugee chief, Filippo Grandi, has said that well over 200,000 people are displaced inside of Lebanon. More than 50,000 have fled to neighbouring Syria, he says. What kind of humanitarian response, Matthew, can you and the World Food Programme provide?
I mean, right now, over just the last 5 days, we've managed to get different forms of food assistance to people. So hot meals, you know, sandwiches, dry ration boxes that will give a family of five enough food for 15 days, but also, you know, ready to eat food like canned, you know, tuna, canned beans and fresh bread. To 80,000 people. We've also, just in the last 24 hours, managed to get cash delivered to people through an existing system with the government on the social safety net for 45,000 people. So they've got a bit of money on their cards to buy what is available. But we're playing catch up because, as you rightly said, there are hundreds of thousands in shelters. But there's many, many more not yet counted, who are not in permanent shelters. So there's around 800 schools and vocational training centres that the government has availed people to stay into, to stay in. But there's a lot more, probably two times or three times more people staying in unfinished buildings, you know, by the roadside, sleeping in roundabouts, you know, anywhere they can get a roof over their heads. So that number's much, much higher, I'm afraid. And we're going to have to really significantly increase our support, because there's a great fear that you know, by the end of this week, there'll be more than a million people displaced.
My goodness, that is a frightening statistic, isn't it, Matthew? And they're not in within your attention because they're not in permanent shelter, or they're in flux or transit. Why is that? You say they're in transient shelter. Is that it?
What we have been relying on so far, and it has been working, is when people move into shelters, they register and immediately they are referred for assistance. And in fact, the coordination with the government's been going quite well when people have gone into those 800 and more shelters. But just because of the significance of the escalation over the last few days, many, many more people have suddenly panicked and moved. Mm-hmm. So we're going to play catch up, and we're going to have to trace people and find them, which of course is a lot harder to do than when they go to established shelters.
We're reading of reports that there are Israeli tanks massing at the border near Lebanon. What if there's a ground offensive?
I mean, a lot of people, first of all, have left the southern parts of the country already, but there are people still left behind. We estimate around 20,000 to 25,000 people in some of those villages in the front lines, very close to the border. So we're really concerned about accessing and sustaining access to people. And of course, typically the people that don't move are the elderly, people with disabilities, people just, you know, too tired, too poor, too traumatized to move. And so it's absolutely essential we continue to have access to them. But it is going to raise, you know, the fear stakes. It is going to further traumatize people.
It's also a country that has suffered a crippling economy since 2019. It's taken in 6 million people from neighboring Syria because of their war. And it's been doing its best to accommodate those people. You're calling now, on foot of what's happening in Lebanon, you're calling on the international community to mobilise over $100 million to fund your operation throughout the end of the year. Is that right?
That's correct. So, you know, if we're going to need to sustain an operation to support, as I said, over a million people who've been displaced because of this war, as well as, you know, cumulatively dealing with all of those other problems that this country has been, you know, sadly facing over the last few years, the economic decline, the impact of the Beirut port blast, you know, all of which has already created, you know, poverty that the country hadn't seen for decades. And if we're going to need to do that, we're going to need to have to phase up our operations enormously. Obviously, what we'd really like is for this to de-escalate fast. Then we wouldn't need that much money. Mm-hmm. We could actually start helping people get home and starting back, you know, back to looking after themselves again. So what we would be calling for is a de-escalation and a fast de-escalation, diplomatic solutions, and an end to this sudden and horrific upsurge in violence.
Can I ask you about Gaza, Matthew? Because I know you spent the first 6 months of this year in Gaza. How bad is the humanitarian catastrophe at this point? We've seen the death and the destruction, including health facilities destroyed, and the spread of disease in Gaza and the starvation. Can you put into words the scale of the humanitarian crisis there at the moment?
I mean, Gaza is very hard to explain how bad the situation has become. I mean, in Gaza, you know, a little bit like Lebanon now, 11 months ago, people were being displaced for the first time because of the violence. You know, leaflets were dropping, or messages were coming out on the radio, or they were getting messages on their telephones, you've got to get out of your suburb, it's going to be bombed. And then it was. And people learned fast that when they're told to run, they run. Otherwise, you know, the consequences are lethal. But that's been going on in Gaza now for 11 months, and people have been displaced so many times they forget where they're from. And there is nothing left. There is not one area of Gaza where there's normalcy. You know, roads are destroyed, sewage pipes are destroyed, you know, clean water pipes are destroyed. There's no electricity, and there's barely any shelter in terms of, you know, in terms of buildings which are standing. The place stinks, and there's flies everywhere. There's refuse and rubbish rotting in the streets. There's the smell of death, the smell of, you know, of the sanitation crisis. It is a public health crisis, and it is a mental health crisis. And as you said, people are facing hunger and deprivation that they didn't know was possible. It's a scar on the world's conscience. It should be, because it's absolutely abysmal and should never have gotten to where it is today.
Mm. Matthew Hollingsworth of the World Food Programme, thank you for joining us in the programme.